Welcome to the Retzel Health Law Hotspot. Health Law Hotspot is a podcast for physicians and health professionals that covers the legal issues and trends that affect the healthcare industry.
Hi, everyone. This is Erica Adler, and welcome to the Health Law Hotspot. I am the health practice leader and shareholder at Retzel & Andrus, and today I am joined by Carl White, who is founder of the Market Advisory Group. Carl focuses on helping healthcare businesses build sustainable growth, and he has over 20 years of experience in doing marketing in healthcare. Welcome, and we're really excited to have you back on our podcast.
It's great to be back. Thanks.
So today we're talking about a great topic, and that topic is, how do you avoid theft and misuse of social media accounts by a practice's own employees? And this is a fantastic topic because it's actually based on some recent experiences that I've had and which I have been discussing with Carl. So we wanted to share with you the experience that we've had and kind of let you know some things that you might not be thinking about and some steps that you might take to be able to protect your practice. So let me just set up the scene here where you have a physician that may have social media accounts, Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, whatever accounts they're using. I think those are probably the most popular and maybe the only ones I can think of. And the doctor may have set them up themselves. Some doctors are pretty savvy, or they may have their employees who have set those up. In both instances, employees may have access to those accounts. They may be posting, photos or other types of information. They may be interacting with visitors to those sites, and they may be purchasing ads or something else on behalf of the practice. So there's different types of activities in which those employees might engage. So recently we've had some experiences where employees left their employment for a variety of different reasons and were unwilling or uncooperative to turn over control of those accounts back to our doctors. Our doctors literally did not realize that they had no control over those accounts. In some cases, the accounts had been completely set up by those employees, so they didn't have passwords and it may not have even been opened in their name, even if they were business accounts. And this created a tremendous problem, which can lead to litigation or having to literally pay off that rogue employee to turn over those accounts. So this is kind of the situation. And I know physicians really rely on their staff and sometimes that reliance may be to their detriment. And so one of the things Carl and I were talking about was what happens once that person also has control over that account. Maybe they're just saying, pay me and I'll give it back, but they could also do things that are destructive. They can close the account. And I happen to understand that Instagram and Facebook are actually connected. So if you close one, the other one can be closed down as well. Or post things that are damaging to the reputation of the practice as well. So Carl, just want to try to turn this over to you and see what your thoughts are on this topic.
Yeah, so and when we were talking about this leading up to it, my first thought was, I have a lot of clients, we manage their social media for them, but we don't own any of those pages. We make sure that they do, because we view, let's just take their Facebook business page, as a piece of property. It's an online property, and it's true, you didn't pay anything to Facebook to set it up, but it's a piece of property, and it's a property that we think our clients ought to own themselves. We don't want to own it. We want them to own it because it can turn into something really valuable. And so that was the first thought that I had, is that, if your listeners, because a lot of people just kind of sort of, blow off Facebook, or they don't make that link. They don't think it's serious, or they just don't think about it at all. It becomes a blind spot. And then you've got this really epic horror story going on when it can all be avoidable. So the first thing I thought of is, think of it as a piece of property that has valuable, just like other property that you own or lease in your practice. If you have like a piece of equipment in your practice and you leased it, the lease would be in your name, right? Nobody would think twice about it. You would never put that lease in an employee's name. And if that employee left, they could just take that piece of equipment with them. It would never even occur to you. Think of your think of your social media profiles in the same way. And then the second part, sort of the mechanics of it is, let's just take Facebook as an example. Facebook has different levels of access for business pages. And the more access you have, the more you can do. And so if you're gonna have an employee or any number of employees or anybody do stuff in your social media page, make sure that they get only the level of access they need to do what you want them to do. And that way, if they leave, instead of them being able to take the page with them, you just kick them out. Like if an employee left, if an employee, for any listener, quit your practice today, you would take back their email address. If they have their own phone number, you'd take it back. You'd take back everything because they don't work for you anymore. Well, in this setup, when you're the owner and nobody else is of your page, you take back access to the Facebook or Instagram, Google My Business website, all of these properties. And then it's just sort of a clean break, just like anything else. And so for your client who's going through this horror show, that was my first thought was, I wonder if this person had the level of access where they could just take it with them. And the answer is probably yes. And if it were set up differently, your client wouldn't be facing this at all.
Right. And I think the problem is that physicians are busy. Some of them are very tech savvy, but some of them are not. And they do tend to trust very much the people who work for them. And until something goes sour, they have no reason to not trust that person. So I absolutely agree with you. You know, anybody listening to this podcast needs to go and take a look at those accounts and see who owns them and who has control over them. And, you know, what would happen if that person left? Do they know the password to get in? You know, it's one thing to have control, but then trying to get that password back is if, you know, somehow you don't have the account, that's another issue as well. One of the important things to also think about is what damage can be done, you know, when you don't have that control. So somebody leaves, they're upset, they were let go, who knows what the reason is. They can obviously misuse that site. They could post false information, derogatory information, offensive, you know,
statements. They could take the page down. Yeah, imagine taking the page down. So let's say you had a few hundred followers on your Facebook page. If that page gets deleted, which it just takes, it's two clicks in 14 days and the page is gone, they're all gone. You know, we have clients, there's some really well-organized Facebook groups around where, like one around here is called the North Shore Moms Facebook group. There was over 13,000, you know, members of this group. It's really, really well run. And every one of my clients knows about it and they get referrals. They sort of play very, play according to the rules. If somebody recommends one of my clients in there, you know that the next place that that person's going to go is check out their Facebook page. Well, now imagine that your Facebook page is gone or it's got terrible posts. The hours have been messed up. Somebody changes the phone number. There's a hundred ways that somebody could mess with you and you wouldn't even know it. And there's not much you can do about it because it's not under your control anymore, or really it never was. And the other thing is it's not easy for people to stare at a new employee or an employee and in their mind say, how could this person really mess with me if they really wanted to? It's not a comfortable thought process, but I think it is a necessary thought process. It doesn't have to take very long, but you know, if they own your page or they have that level of access, they could. You know, and in fact, even if somebody quits and never does anything, they still have access to it because you've given them that level of access to it. And I don't know, I just, if somebody's left your company or your practice and you've taken everything else back because they no longer work for you, give yourself the ability to do the same with your social media properties and your website and other listings where this matters, and just make it a clean break, right? I mean, we were talking beforehand, you work in a building where you have to badge in and badge out every day. If somebody quit, you take their badge back. They're not allowed back in and nobody would think twice about it. If the practice owner, the doctors could just think the same way, I own this property, I should protect this property because it's representing my practice just like everything else is. That's all, it's just that trigger. And then ask whoever's the practice manager or whoever else is in charge, who owns these things, and let's make sure that the right ownership's in the right hands.
Right, and you know, I was thinking, you know, when somebody has control over a page, I wasn't just thinking about, you know, doing something innocuous like changing the hours. I was literally thinking about, you know, photos they might post, or because these are dental and medical practices, they might, you know, do something that violates HIPAA by sharing information appropriately. They might post something that's truly offensive about one of the doctors in the practice that hurts the reputation of the doctor as well as the practice. It's really hard to undo damage like that.
You're absolutely right.
It's coming from the practice's own page by somebody who's authorized to be on that page. And that's really hard to, you know, to turn around. And once the damage is done, and no matter how much money you've spent building up that practice and your reputation and your marketing to that point, it's and no matter what kind of apology or correction you try to send out afterwards, people are always going to remember what they saw and what they heard and what they read or whatever it is. So it can really undo years of effort to build up a reputation.
That's right. And a reputation for anybody in any business is crucial, probably more so with medical, because people are putting, you know, an important part of their lives in your hands. And if they see, it doesn't even, you know, if it's photos that just seem out of character with the rest of the practice, that creates a big question mark. And people don't like question marks when they're thinking about which provider they're going to choose. And, you know, you said you could notify everybody. You're never going to know all the people who saw it. It's an impossible task. And one thing I can tell you is that Facebook's help desk is not speedy. And, you know, the resolutions are hard. They take a lot of time if they get resolved at all. Google's the same. They deal with billions of people. And so whatever this bad, you know, this person did in terms of offensive photos, videos, bad reviews, whatever, it's going to sit up there for a while, no matter what the resolution is. And lots of people are going to see it. And yeah, why, you know, don't let that happen to you. Every other part of your practice's reputation, you cultivate and protect with great care. Just have the instinct to realize that that same great care applies to your social media properties. And that's the trigger, I think, just to go walk down the hall and ask the question, can we please get an audit of who's got what level of access to which one of our social media properties? And let's just make sure it's proper, you know? And you never know if somebody's disgruntled until they leave. You just never know.
And I think people are uncomfortable, you know, raising the issue, particularly with employees who have worked for them for a long time. We come across that discomfort, not just when we're talking about social media, but, you know, it's longtime employees are typically also the ones responsible for other acts of dishonesty in the practice as well, which we're actually going to cover in a podcast coming up soon. And so it can be uncomfortable, but it is a worse outcome not to ask these questions. And it should be part of the social media policies of the practice to get this down and make sure that you're on top of it and to be in charge. Another interesting thing to me, and typically we find this out only when we help a practice sell, is that very often practices have also relied on their staff to buy their domain names. You know, and the ownership, and it's not a big charge. Sometimes the person who set it up might have even just paid the $35 or whatever it was to get. But now that name is everything, and it's part of what they're really selling. I don't know if you've seen that, but to me, that's also another area that people should be looking into while everyone's still getting along and you can resolve these issues, is we need to make sure the practice actually owns the domain name that it's relying upon as well.
Oh my God. I mean, if you could imagine a scenario worse than what we've been talking about with a Facebook page, now imagine that your website just goes down one day because somebody else owned it, or they redirect your URL, your domain name, to somewhere. They could do all sorts of things for pennies and moments, not even a lot of time or money. And you are at the mercy of, you may not even know who. You definitely need to own these things. And this is the way we run everything. And so, do you own it? And sometimes we have to, like, I never own anything. So if we have to set up a Google My Business listing or Facebook business page, I will get on Zoom with a client. We will click through it together and go through the steps, because it is possible where I could set something up and transfer ownership to them. And nobody's really said, well, that's what I want you to do, because I would do it, but I'd rather they own it from the outset. Now, just give me the access I need, and then I don't need any more. And if we need to change it, we will. But yeah, I mean, domain, website, social media properties, Google My Business listing, I mean, other online properties, the owner of the practice or someone they super duper trust should be the only ones who own them, just like anything else you need to own in your own practice for your practice to run well.
Right. And, you know, you don't and sometimes find out about these things until it's too late. So yeah. The idea is, and what I'm really trying to promote today to anybody listening, is to ask these questions about your own practice. Don't assume that any employee is trustworthy enough. You know, now, Carl, maybe you tell me, let's say it's the shareholders of a practice are the ones, can you have more than one person listed as having the highest authority in case something does happen to the person who is on there? Like, how does that work?
Yeah, so I mean, I could speak most to like Facebook, a website, at least in WordPress, Google My Business, you can have more than one owner or admin level. They're kind of the same thing. You can. And every one of those people can do the most, they have the most access and the most flexibility to add other people, subtract people, spend money, publish and post. Yeah, you can definitely do that.
All right.
There doesn't have to be like a single, it's not like a sole proprietorship type of setup. You can have more than one.
Okay, perfect. So even easier solution, if you've got a couple of shareholders, a couple of managers, those should be the people that really have the highest access so they can undo or take back any accounts that are up there. And, you know, we're not getting into trademarks or intellectual property while we're here, but these same concepts fit in. You know, if you let one of your employees, you know, send in some kind of copyright for you or file a trademark application, hopefully you're using a lawyer who would know better, but people do these things. You know, you just got to make sure that you actually own what you think you own. You know, a lot of times people choose a domain name that kind of goes with their trademark name, but guess what? If you don't own either one, or you own one and not the other, your rights may not be as great as you think they are. So just something to think about as well. And we've covered, you know, trademarks as it relates to healthcare in the past, but I think that's a really pertinent issue here as well. So one last thing I just want to kind of cover, which is, I know a lot of what you do is marketing for practices. And I know in the past you've told me that some of those opportunities to connect with patients can run through their website as well, the practice's website. So if that domain name gets taken or the site gets shut down, how does that impact practices who are using their websites to connect with patients, whether it's information or gathering data, et cetera? What would be the impact of that? And who could they use that information themselves? Because I'm actually thinking about HIPAA here.
Me too.
As well.
Yeah. Okay. So, we'll start with the basic, which is a contact us form. Every website has it. So some contact forms are HIPAA compliant and some are not. So let's take a one that's not. Usually what happens is if it's set up, it's always set up properly. So if I were to fill out a contact form on Retzel's site right now, and then I hit submit, it should be set up so that somebody on your side gets an email notification, hey, Carl White, and what's in the form, and then you get it. So at least you've got a record of it. It doesn't live only in the website. If you are a medical practice and that form was not a HIPAA compliant form and the hosting wasn't either and everything else, if the website is then, you know, taken, somebody, whoever took it, is probably not a covered entity. And you, while you were a covered entity, just gave protected health information to somebody else. And my assumption is that HIPAA would have a problem with that because you're supposed to be protecting that. If it's a HIPAA compliant form, the ones that I'm familiar with, the data on that form itself never lives in the website. It lives somewhere else that's secure. And so it really wouldn't be an issue. But if it's not, and a lot of people don't use HIPAA compliant forms, it's just another thing. It's like a blind spot. They don't think about it. So if, just like I said, person X just took your website, and nobody ever goes in and deletes those contact forms, you know, that they're archived. If that prospective patient turned into an actual patient, my gut says you'd have to deal with the before they became a patient form as well. You have yourself a problem, right? And they could trace it back eventually. So yeah, you've got yourself a problem. The other part of it is, the second level is, if you're doing any kind of online advertising, if you step back from HIPAA for a second, you know, if you ever clicked on an ad and then the next 6 months, everywhere you go online, there's like, you know, that same company, that's called remarketing. And from an advertising point of view, it's annoying, but it's effective because it's reminders of you. And that's what advertising takes. But there are ways in which you can do, like, either, you know, Google ads or Facebook ads, where you start to wonder, are we crossing a HIPAA line? And it is, I believe, possible that not much of that data really lives in the website. It gets back, you know, if you go back to the Facebook page and they took that Facebook page and your Facebook ad account, you would likely have a HIPAA problem, likely, if you're really going deep on advertising. For Google ads, I'm going to beg some ignorance. I'm not sure that you can get down to the patient level. There's other things that get more complicated to explain, but just the contact form alone would be enough. And if if I were, you know, OCR or an investigator, and this situation crossed my desk, knowing what I know as in marketing, I'd go look at those contact forms and just start asking questions. I wouldn't even worry about any advertising, because some of the forms I see, we set up HIPAA compliant relationships. I don't need to look at this stuff, but I can. People can disclose a lot, you know, about their health history. Right. Even if they say nothing, their cell phone number or their email address plus their name counts as protected health information, but they'll say a lot more because they want to explain their background. And man, now it's all out there and you're supposed to be protecting it.
Right. And I guess the other thing is that, and I didn't realize this, or I didn't think about it, is that if the person controlling the website can also make themselves the one who receives all that information, you know, what are they doing with it? You wouldn't leave your list of patients or referral sources just kind of sitting out for somebody to take, and yet here you are doing that. So I think there's a lot of issues in this topic, whether it's HIPAA or intellectual property or just losing all the time and effort you've put into marketing your practice, these all kind of come together. So let's give everybody who's listening kind of some parting advice, right? Number one, when you finish listening to this podcast, you go back and you find out who has control over your website, who has control over your domain name, maybe even any kind of trademark or other intellectual property you might have. Who has control over your Facebook account, your LinkedIn account, your Instagram account? And if anybody other than a senior person with the practice, an owner of the practice, or the right person has the most authority, then that should be changed. Would you agree?
I would. And the words you're going to want to ask is for our website, for our social media properties, for our Google My Business listing, who has what permission level access? Because the person you're asking is probably going to say, what does that mean? And they can Google permission level access for Facebook, and you'll get a nice helpful article, permission level access for the other ones, because that's the word that's the term that's used. And then it'll say like admin or moderator or analyst or whatever. And then the second question is that the right level of access for them? What does each of those levels mean? In Facebook, if you're an admin, you can do everything. I mean, everything. You can spend money, you can post, you can add people, you can walk away.
Okay. That's the first thing that needs to be done. I guess the second thing is to make sure that you have a policy in place about how that level of access can be changed and who would have different levels of access at different times so things don't happen that you're not aware of. I guess the third thing I would recommend is to have a clear policy about what happens when somebody's employment ends, right? Mm-hmm. Now, people won't always comply with it just because I say, when you leave, you must, you know, not ever try and go onto our account again, or we will immediately take you off the account, whatever. Just because we have a plan doesn't mean we're following it. So I think if you can have a plan and the right people in your office trained to follow it, that would also prevent this. Some people have suggested that another solution would be to have any employees with this access kind of sign an agreement where they agree like not to do this, but then you just get into kind of legal enforcement. It's better not to let it happen in the first place if possible. So
yeah,
I think, you know, to do that is best.
Yeah, I think of your second one about, I just think of it like onboarding a new employee, and if they're going to have access to online properties, you give it to them, and then you have a offboarding or an exit or whatever you want to call it, like a checklist. I mean, it sounds kind of cold, but there's certain administrative things that have to get done. So if you're going to revoke their email address and their phone number and their whatever else, just add to that checklist. Oh yeah, this one's got access to our Facebook page. Kick them out. And somebody just has to go in and do it. It could be really simple, but it's just forgetting about it.
Absolutely. And then I think finally, you know, the last point is if it's too late, if this has already happened to you, if you think somebody is using your site, somebody who used to work there is messing around with it, or you need help with postings that have been made that are hurting your reputation, I think it's time to call your lawyer. And obviously, unfortunately, we now have lots of experience in this area. We'd like to help you prevent this, but if it's too late, then I think you also need to make sure that you nip it in the bud, because the damage can get worse the longer you wait.
Yes, totally agree. Yeah.
Perfect. All right. Well, any final words you want to share before we wrap up?
No, I think we hit it. I think the story you have was just amazing. But I'll just just to be like over the top repetitive, just ask who has what access to these level, to these online properties, and let's get it to where we want it to be compared to wherever it is now, and think about owning it and reputation and, you know, what would happen if something terrible happened, and then you just, mission accomplished.
Right. And I guess one final thing we should suggest is that if you are not confident just having employees in your office be the ones handling your marketing and your social media, that you should talk to an expert in the company, you know, somebody like Carl and his company. Then you have a contract with them where they, you know, are making sure that the rights to that social media stay in the right hand. So a lot of times we try and save money by using employees in our office, but in the long run, it can cost us a lot more. And this is just one example of that, right?
Yeah, definitely. And it's funny about marketing. I mean, when if it's a dedicated employee, it can definitely work. But when it's when marketing is added onto the long list of things that anybody in the office has to do, it just seems like marketing always loses that time battle and then it doesn't get done. And marketing just needs to be done consistently if it's going to work. And if it's done stop, start, on, off, here or there when there's time, you don't get that traction that's important. And so that's where, whether you're going to have it in-house or outside, whatever else you're looking for, make sure consistency is part of what you're getting.
Perfect. Well, thanks for joining us today. And thank all of you for joining us at the Health Law Hotspot. We look forward to seeing you next time. And you can find out more at ralaw.com and also view our prior podcast. So thanks for joining us. Thanks, Carl.
Thank you.
The Retzel Health Law Hotspot is made available by the firm and its attorneys for educational purposes and to provide general information, not to provide specific legal advice. Use of the Retzel Health Law Hotspot does not create an attorney-client relationship between you and the firm or any of its attorneys. The Retzel Health Law Hotspot should not be used as a substitute for competent legal advice, and you should contact an attorney in your state about any legal needs or questions you may have.